Now, when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I would like to thank you with all my heart for being here today and for hanging on. I'd like to thank you for soldiering on with us through that first hour. I think we did a good program. I think we got out okay. We had, thanks to Lizzie and Jay, our system crashed like it does every now and then. And there's a, I think Lizzie was saying pretty much what a fellow told her. But matter of fact, he's our web guy, our webmaster. He said something like this, and he's about as good as they get. I don't know if he's good as Jay or not, but he's awfully good. And he said they're gremlins in electrical systems. They're very complex. They're very fragile. The least little thing can happen. Just to give you a quick thing. Years ago, when I was at TPC, and me and James were out in the old bean field, the computer system would go, that crap happened all the time, and I could figure out what it was. But thank God we're back up now on our system. I'm off the phone, and we're doing great. But I'd like to thank that fella that came on. His name is Bill Watchkotch. He came on, and people, I really apologize that we didn't get to do the German history last hour. Me and Paul both had planned it, but our guest canceled out. Like, I think it's three weeks in a row he's canceled. So I don't think we're going through with him anymore. Even though he's in his 90s and he's an expatriate German, so we just can't depend on people that leave us hanging like that. Right now, folks, before I forget, the first hour, since it's so hectic, I forgot to name our donors. Without donors, we cannot go. And we had the one and only, the precious Miss Buddy. She's the wife our dear Mr. Buddy. Mr. Buddy supported us. He supported Gene. He supported me. I don't know who he hasn't supported. He supported out, and Miss Buddy still helps keep Blood River Radio on the air, and I would like to thank her with all my heart. I really would. Miss Buddy, if you're listening, I thank you so much. And another fellow who just thinks you're salt of the earth too, Gene, he's on, and I know he thinks the same thing. And Will Franklin down in Texas, he's been becoming a regular donor. And I'd like to thank you so much, Mr. Bus Buddy. Again, I'd like to thank you so much, Will. And I'd like to thank all of our other donors to keep us on, because we couldn't do it without it. We just could not, absolutely could not go. I'm not a rich guy at all. Anyway, people, we have, as I said in the outline, the show notes, the Bitter Ender swapped hours with Sister Braveheart, Monica, because the Bitter Ender he's in very high demand. I'm so grateful we can get him here. So he has switched hours. So Sister Monica is not going to be on this hour. It's going to be the Bitter Ender, and Sister Monica is going to be on the third hour. So anyway, with that, I'm getting the hell out of the way, and our resident professional historian go. So go ahead, Bitter Ender. Tell us what you got, brother.
All right, sir. Well, I want to thank a lot of the people you mentioned, Buddy Kirtland and Patsy, his wife. They would come over from Arkansas and visit the Forest home, and we'd sit out on the front porch there in the rocking chairs and talk about how the country was going down the toilet and what they needed to do to fix it. Of course, they never listened to us. And then I'd always run down the road and get us some hamburgers and cheeseburgers, and we'd eat out there on the porch. Always a great time. That was just so relaxing out there, to be out there in the countryside and no houses around us, no buildings, no nothing, and just see the deer running across the fields. And great time we spent with Buddy and Patsy, and they are just salt of the earth, super great patriots and great Confederate patriots. They sponsor a lot of Confederate operations all over the country, and we really appreciate him and really miss Buddy. Yeah, we just had a great time together. Was going to talk tonight about some more of our June events in the War for Southern Independence, and then give our listeners a little bit of a brief history on some war battles that were fought, not so much in the South. You know, we've heard of Gettysburg, well, that's in Pennsylvania, but, you know, like the battles in Virginia and the Atlanta Campaign and Chickamauga and Shiloh. But we're going to talk about some tonight they may not have even heard of, and not even in the South. But one we're going to start out with John Hunt Morgan's raid that left Sparta, Tennessee on June the 11th, headed north, and he was under orders from Braxton Bragg to take out the Louisville and Nashville Railroad. Now, Rosecrans, the Union general, was headed towards Chattanooga. And what Bragg wanted Morgan to do in 1863 was what Forrest had done in 1862. You remember, Forrest swung around in July of 1862, swung around behind Rosecrans and hit the Union Supply Depot and fortifications at Murfreesboro and captured the federal soldiers there and tore up the railroad track and took out the telegraph lines. And Rosecrans had to turn around and scurry back to Nashville because Forrest had taken out his supply lines. So Bragg was hoping that John Hunt Morgan would do the same thing on the Nashville and Louisville and Nashville Railroad, take that railroad out and strand Rosecrans in Middle Tennessee and have no supplies going down to Chattanooga. And he told him, whatever you do, do not cross the Ohio River. Take care of business in Kentucky between Louisville and Nashville. Morgan pretty much disobeyed orders. He set out from Sparta, Tennessee with 2,400 men on June 11th, headed north, and he went across the Ohio River into Indiana, and he thought that if he created a big enough distraction up there, Rosecrans would have to pull soldiers away from his Chattanooga campaign and send them north to try to stop Morgan in Indiana. Well, the Yankee army was big enough, they didn't have to do that. They had plenty of troops north of the Ohio River that could tend to Morgan and take care of him. Rosecrans was not about to give up any men for somebody chasing around in Indiana. If he burned people's homes and stole their cattle or whatever, that's their tough luck. His objective was Chattanooga, and he wasn't going to be distracted from that. So that didn't work out. So anyway, Morgan is across the river, going through Indiana, heading east, crosses over into Ohio, and it did. It set off a panic among the civilians in southern Ohio. They were burning bridges and cutting telegraph lines, and, of course, they were taking horses to replace their horses that were wearing out and fighting almost daily skirmishes with the local guard, state militia, and a lot of the federal troops, regular troops, were being sent there to try to trap Morgan on the north side of the Ohio River. They got over close to, back toward Kentucky, and the river was blocked. The Yankees had sent gunboats down from Pittsburgh and from Cincinnati to block the river, and they had it blocked, and they had to split up, and some of them went sort of northeast and crossed into West Virginia. Some of them got away, and then at their ford across the river, most of his men got across. And Morgan was across the river into Kentucky, but there were about 400 or 500 of his men still on the Ohio side of the river. So rather than leaving them there and abandoning them, Morgan rode back across the river, and now it was too hot to get across there. They went on downriver about 20 miles to try to find another ford to get across, and wound up Morgan and about 300 of them were captured. They were sent to the Ohio State Penitentiary in Columbus. But they escaped in November of 63. They say that one of the guards had been paid off or was a Southern sympathizer and pretty much allowed them to tunnel under the wall and get out of there. And this is pretty cool what they did. They figured that if they headed south, they were going to be on the lookout for them. Every train station, every road south of Columbus was going to be guarded. So they went north and got rid of their Confederate uniforms and got civilian clothes and dressed up and had enough money to get train tickets, go on a train going south. And Morgan was sitting there being very quiet, and a Yankee officer gets on the train. Now, they're up north of Columbus, Ohio. Yankee officer gets on the train, plops down right next to John Hunt Morgan. Did not know who he was. Didn't have TV back then, so he didn't have a lot of pictures. He'd heard of Morgan, but he didn't know what he looked like. So they're coming down on the railroad past Columbus, and this Yankee officer points to the state prison over there and tells Morgan, "You see that prison over there? That's where they got that rebel Morgan for safekeeping." And Morgan says, and Morgan said, "Well, I hope he's as safe as he is today." And our own down there never knew that Morgan was sitting right next to him. So anyway, he did escape and got back to the Confederacy. Of course, he got killed in East Tennessee, up in Greenville, Tennessee, about a year later. And we will come back to another event, a big battle that took place in June of 1864, after our break.
Can't wait to hear it. Can't wait to hear it, folks.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these this means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Step into the boots of the American West with Range Magazine, where grit meets grace. This is a front row seat to the stories, struggles, and triumphs of ranchers, farmers, and stewards of the land. From jaw-dropping photography to no-nonsense reporting, Range brings you the untold tales of life on the range. Whether you're a city dweller with a cowboy's heart or living life where the pavement ends, Range speaks to the soul of the West. Subscribe today at rangemagazine.com.
Are you ready to stand up for your community and support your local sheriff? Join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and become a vital member of the Sheriff's Citizens Posse. At CSPOA.org, we empower citizens like you through weekly webinars, arming you with the knowledge to back your constitutional county sheriff. Together, we can uphold our Constitution and ensure liberty and justice for all. Your community needs you now more than ever.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Dear Blood River Radio family, without further ado, we'll go right back to the bitter inner himself. He wears many hats. Well, he's got his professor's, college professor's hat on tonight. He couldn't go fight anymore right until we get new swords. Anyway, I guess he just tore the last damn sword we had out, and we're going to have some more made for him. But go ahead, Bitter Inner.
All right, sir. Well, we were talking about some of our June events in our Southern War for Independence. And first segment, we covered John Hunt Morgan's raid into Indiana and Ohio. Started out June the 11th from Sparta, Tennessee, and crossed the Ohio River into Indiana, and went up through Kentucky and then crossed the Ohio River, Indiana, Ohio, and then wound up being captured, but he escaped in November of 63. Now, another big event in June, since that's the month we're winding up. Yesterday, the 27th of June, well, not yesterday exactly, but the 27th of June, 1864, there was a big battle fought at Kennesaw Mountain, Georgia, and it was part of the Atlanta campaign. William Sherman had taken over the Army in the West from Grant, and Grant had been sent east to take on Robert E. Lee. And Sherman's objective was the city of Atlanta, the rail center, manufacturing center. And the fall of that would really hurt the Confederacy as far as supplies and sending troops and whatever they needed to the Eastern Theater or back to the Central South, either one. So this campaign actually started in May of that year up at Dalton, Georgia. And from May through June, the fighting had been going on up and down the Western and Atlantic Railroad, which ran from Chattanooga down to Atlanta. And there had been two or three attempts by the Yankees to destroy that railroad or break it, which would have crippled the Confederates that were still fighting in Tennessee in 63. There was a raid by a Union cavalry unit. Colonel Abel D. Strait took off across northern Alabama and was going to go into Georgia and destroy the railroad. And he would have probably been successful. There weren't any troops in Alabama to stop him and some militia in Georgia. That was about it. The problem was that a cavalry officer by the name of Nathan Bedford Forrest got on his trail. And, I mean, in 2 week running battle, just rode him down. And they finally surrendered about 10 or 12 miles short of the Georgia state line. And Strait and his whole command were captured by Forrest. Then, if you remember the Walt Disney movie, The Great Locomotive Chase, they sent spies down there to get on the train at Kennesaw, Georgia, or Big Shanty, as it was called back then, and come north and take over the train and burn the bridges and burn, set the boxcars on fire inside of the tunnels and burn the timbers and collapse the tunnels. But a very determined conductor on that train, when he saw his train being stolen, William Fuller went out after him and running down the track and finally got a hand car and then a little engine from a lumber yard and then finally got on the big engine, the Texas, and ran them down, and they were all captured. So there were two attempts to take out that railroad. But now Sherman is going the other way. He's coming from Chattanooga down the railroad headed toward Atlanta. And there were battles at Resaca, at New Hope Church, at Dallas, Pickett's Mill. If you ever get a chance to go, Pickett's Mill is a state park in Georgia. And that battlefield is a great battlefield. There are no McDonald's or Walgreens or Walmart or anything built all around the battlefield. It still looks like it did back in 1864. And a very good one-sided Confederate victory there at Pickett's Mill if you get a chance to go. Then the really big battle in this campaign happened at Kennesaw Mountain on June the 27th. There were about 100,000 troops under Sherman and about 50,000 Confederate troops under Joseph E. Johnston trying to defend the Atlanta and stop Sherman before he got there. The battle took place early that morning. The Confederates were dug in across the top of Kennesaw Mountain and a couple of other smaller hills on the flanks there. And I've seen drawings, of course, they did have photographs, of how they pulled these cannons up on top of this mountain. And it was so steep, even horses couldn't pull them. So they had to get about 20 men on ropes and pull, and then they would have one or two behind them with logs. And as soon as they would have to stop and catch their breath, they'd throw these logs under the wheels on the cannons to keep them from rolling back down the mountain. But they got them up there. And they had a clear field of fire, and Sherman got tired of trying to flank Johnston out. And he thought that he had faked one way, and most of the Confederates had gone over to the west, and they were very weak on Kennesaw Mountain. So he ordered a frontal assault on this mountain and wound up losing about 3,000 troops. And the Confederates lost about 1,000 during the battle. That one of the focal points of the battle at Kennesaw Mountain was a place called the Dead Angle. And that was a place where the Confederate lines kind of stuck out in a point from the mountain because there was a hill right in front of that. And if they didn't take the line there, the Yankees could get right up on them and be just a few yards away before they jumped right into the trenches with them. So they had to man that dead angle, and it was under constant attack. And there's a fantastic description of that in Sam Watkins' book, Company H, because Sam and the 1st Tennessee Infantry were in that section of the field known as the Dead Angle. And he said the temperature that day was probably close to 100. And his tongue was sticking to his mouth, and he had fired his rifle so many times that the barrel was so hot, when you tore that paper cartridge and poured the powder down the barrel, the powder would just explode, and there'd be a big flash coming out of the barrel. You couldn't even load it. So they were having to pick up rifles from dead and wounded soldiers to use to reload and shoot. And during that day, there were so many rifles being fired and a lot of the sparks coming out of the barrel, it set the underbrush on fire. And a lot of the Yankee soldiers that were wounded and couldn't move were laying out there in these fires, and their clothes were catching on fire and they were being burned. and a Confederate officer jumped up on the earthwork and put a white cloth on his sword and waved it and called a truce to give the Yankee soldiers the time to get up there and drag their wounded out of these fires and put, you know, slap them with a blanket or something to put the fire out that was on their uniform. And even some of the Confederates came over the trenches and helped them get them out. And once they got all the wounded out of the fire, then they went back and started shooting and killing each other again.
Yeah.
But at least they did call a truce for that. And I've enjoyed going down there. Kennesaw Mountain is a national military park. And just about 40 to 50 yards to the left, or I guess that was facing north, so it'd be to the west of that, one of the units that was in that line, not in the dead angle, but to the left of it a little bit, was the 50th Tennessee Infantry. And I had two of my ancestors, Corporal Henry McGee and Captain Albert Sexton, that were in Company H of the 50th Tennessee. So when I would go down there, I'd put a couple of Confederate flags on the trench line where the 50th was. And I'm sure the park rangers went running out there that night and grabbed them and, you know, before defended the offended hyphen Americans or somebody like that. But anyway, I hope Corporal McGee and Captain Sexton know that I was there and at least put some flags out where they were. So anyway, so that was one of the things that took place in June. One of the major battles, major events of the war. And then another one we want to talk about, in a little bit later, happened on June 19th. And it was a little bit different from the things that we've been talking about. It was not actually a land battle. It was a naval battle. And it didn't even take place anywhere in the Confederacy or along the coastline. It took place in the English Channel outside the harbor at Cherbourg, France. And this was the battle that was between the Confederate commerce raider, the Alabama, and the U.S. warship, the Kearsarge. And we had talked about this earlier a little bit about the Confederate Navy, but just a brief summary of that. The Confederates knew that they could not match the Yankees ship for ship in the U.S. Navy. So what they had done, they had bought these state-of-the-art sailing ships from the British, Laird Shipyards in Liverpool, England. They were the top shipbuilders in the whole world. These were three-masted ships with sails, but they also had steam engines and a screw propeller. So if there wasn't any wind or if you had to negotiate a real tricky channel to get into a harbor, you could furl the sails and use the steam power to get in there. So the Alabama had been cruising the ocean for over 2 years. And they, during their career, they had captured, destroyed 65 U.S. merchant ships. And the idea was they weren't going after the Federal Navy. They were destroying merchant ships all over the world. And what they were trying to do was put such an economic hurt on the North that they would agree to allow us to have our independence and call off the war, or at least pull ships off the blockade around the South and try to hunt down these commerce raiders. And it wasn't just the Alabama. As the Shenandoah, the Nashville, the Florida, the Sumter, and there were about 15 or 20 of these during the course of the war. And by 1864, no foreign country would ship a cargo on a U.S. ship. They couldn't get insurance for it because the British and the French and the Spanish and the Portuguese, they knew that these Confederate raiders were out there, and if they put their cargo on a U.S. ship, it was pretty likely that it was going to get burned or captured or it'd never make it to where they were sending. So the Alabama had been out for 2 years. The ship was in pretty rough shape. The copper plating along the hull was being pulled back. They couldn't have it repaired. A lot of the wood was beginning to be rotten. So they pulled into the harbor at Cherbourg to try to have the ship repaired. Well, the Yankees in England, the warship there off the coast of England, found out that it was a Confederate ship right across the English Channel in Cherbourg, France. So they sent word to the French that if you repair this ship, you're going to be in trouble with the mighty U.S. of A. So the French, the mighty warriors that they are at this time, bailed out, and they told the Confederates they couldn't repair the ship. And we'll tell you what happened on June 19th, 1864.
How would
would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Details are sketchy at this hour, but we are learning now. The Israeli military says it has killed one of the founders of Hamas. Very rare weekend session today on Capitol Hill as Senate Republicans race to approve President Trump's big, beautiful bill. Senators are expected to take a procedural vote this afternoon to begin considering the bill. Speaker Mike Johnson says he's pleased some House Democrats stood behind President Trump's attack on Iranian nuclear facilities.
Everyone around the world applauded this expertly performed duty by our extraordinary unmatched military. Some of them applauded loudly and openly, and some of them quietly, but everybody except the evil regime in Iran knows this was the right thing to do.
Also at townhall.com, the Trump administration has let go three attorneys connected to the prosecution of those involved with the Capitol riot.
The Justice Department has abruptly fired at least two attorneys who worked as supervisors overseeing the January 6th Capitol riot prosecutions in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, as well as a line attorney who prosecuted cases stemming from the attack. Two people familiar with the matter say a letter was received by one of the prosecutors and it was signed by Attorney General Pam Bondi, and the letter did not provide a reason for the person's removal, effective immediately. A Justice Department spokesperson has declined to comment. The moves came following Trump's sweeping pardons and commutations of sentences for January 6 rioters. Donna Water, Washington.
A lot of Americans are turning away from fireworks this 4th of July. A couple of reasons. Nearly all fireworks are made in China. Another reason, most veterans will tell you fireworks bring back a lot of bad memories. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Big news. Newsmax just went public on the New York Stock Exchange. And millions like you are joining our news revolution. Newsmax is now the fourth highest rated news channel, just behind CNN. Reuters says we're one of the top news brands in America. 40 million Americans go to Newsmax for shows with Rob Schmidt, Greta Van Susteren, Rob Finnerty, and more. So download our free Newsmax app on your smartphone or TV and start watching. President Trump says Newsmax is truly terrific. Get the free Newsmax app and check out Newsmax shares on the stock exchange. Go to NewsmaxInvest.com. That's NewsmaxInvest.com. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities, nor shall there be any sale of securities in any jurisdiction in which such an offer would be unlawful.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people." Unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
God, I love that girl. I can't remember that girl's name, but he was absolutely right. He nailed it, man. You know what? The only thing that matters, folks, is raw necklace force, raw power. Mao Zedong said it best. He said that all political power comes at the end of a gun barrel. And that's so true. Without that, I'm going to shut my mouth, and the bitter ender has got some really gems to tell you people. Some of you people might not like it, but just too bad, so sad if you don't. We're going to say it anyway. Go ahead, bitter ender.
Oh, okay. Well, during the break, we were talking about 4th of July weekend coming up next weekend, and I said, well, that's fine. If you want to go out and shoot off firecrackers and blow your finger off, go ahead. But I just don't celebrate 4th of July. I mean, I'm a sore loser. I admit that. And if we as Southerners can't celebrate our independence, why should we waste our time celebrating the Yankee Independence Day? And they trot out all the Yankee flags and everything you see on TV, the fireworks displays. They got the Battle Hymn of the Repugnant playing in the background, or Yankee Doo-Doo or something like that, some Yankee song. They never play Dixie or the Bonnie Blue Flag or anything like that. So I just say, well, the heck with it. That's just more Yankee junk crammed down your throat. And
yes,
I'm tired
yes.
of it. And you know, they talk about what a great democracy we live under. Well, what about the 13 southern states that voted in a democratic election in their states to leave the Union? And then all of a sudden, we don't have a democracy anymore. We've got a dictatorship that sent an army down here and killed over 280,000 of our young men in the army, and probably another 10,000 civilians were murdered, not by collateral damage, just shot, murdered in their homes.
And raped.
So I don't see the sense of celebrating you know, somebody else's independence when they denied ours. That's just hypocritical.
Amen. It's like celebrating Stalin's birthday or something to me. I think Stalin was his hero compared to those sons of bitches up north. But anyway, sorry to interrupt you, Gene.
No. Saw a great thing online one time. It's like a 4th of July card. It says, you know, July 4th across the top of the card. And then underneath it, it had a picture of Queen Elizabeth back before she passed away with one of those very formal English, you know, dresses and the big hats and everything. And she was had this real mean frown on her face. And then the cartoon line beside it was, "Happy Traitor's Day, you ungrateful louts." So anyway, I thought, now that was pretty good, whoever cooked that one up. Okay, so we're back to June 19th. Now, this is June 19th, 1864. This is not Juneteenth like we have today or whatever that nonsense is. There's a battle fought between a Confederate ship and a Yankee ship in the English Channel outside Cherbourg, France. The Confederate commerce raider, the Alabama, had been out on, never gone back to port, but it had been out on the high seas for over 2 years, destroying Yankee merchant ships, trying to you know, put an economic squeeze on the North to hopefully that would cause the Yankee public to turn against Lincoln and get the war over with. Lincoln didn't care. If they were losing money, Northern businesses were losing money, it was more important to him to crush the South than it was to take care of the Northern businesses that were losing, and the Northern shippers that were losing their ships and their cargoes. So anyway, in June of 1864, the Alabama limped into the port of Cherbourg, France, to try to get repairs. And the Yankee consulate in France, in Paris and in England sent word that they cannot and will not repair that Confederate ship because you're going to lose a lot of your money in trade with the United States. And the French, scaredy the pants that they are, the brilliant army that they had in World War One and World War Two. Of course, when the United States threatened them, they told the Confederates they're going to have to leave. They weren't going to repair their ship. typical of the French. We were talking one time about Ted Nugent and yes. that interview he did with that French reporterette. And this woman asked him, says, do you ever think about what goes through an animal's mind before you shoot them? Because he's a big hunter. And he said, well, ma'am, animals don't think like we do. Animals think about eating. They think about having sex and running away when a loud noise frightens them. You know, like the French. So I thought that's a great comeback. That's a great comeback. So anyway, the French heard a loud noise from the U.S., and they wouldn't allow the Alabama to be repaired there. So the word went out that on Sunday morning, the 19th of June, the Alabama was going to leave port and try to fight it out with the warship of the United States Navy. And they actually ran special trains from Paris down to Cherbourg to let people stand up on the bluff and watch this naval battle out in the English Channel outside the three-mile limit, so they weren't actually in French waters. And the accounts of some of the Confederates said when they left port, they looked back and the whole bluff behind them was just solid black with people that had come down there to see this battle. And the ships were going in these big circles around and around each other and heading up down the channel and firing shots. One of the first shots from the Alabama hit right into the rudder and the post for the rudder. And this was a 132-pound shell. Unfortunately, wow. The fuse didn't go off. And the Alabama had been out on the high seas for so long, a lot of their powder and their fuses had gotten corroded and damp, and you know, if that thing had gone off, it had blown the whole rear end out of the Yankee ship, and the battle would have been over in one of the first shots. But it didn't go off, and eventually the Kearsarge had much more heavier armament on it and guns than the Alabama, and the Alabama was pretty much shot to pieces and started sinking stern first. The bow started coming up out of the water, and it was obviously the ship was sinking. And they'd put lifeboats in, and the Yankees still kept firing on them and trying to hit as many of the lifeboats as they could or whatever. And they said, oh, they thought it was a Confederate trick. They thought that's why they kept firing. They thought it was a Confederate trick. So the stern is underwater. The bow's raised up out of the water, and that's a Confederate trick. What did they think? They had a giant submarine or something like that. And one of the stories about that was Dr. Llewellyn was the ship's doctor on board the Alabama, and they were loading these wounded in these lifeboats and getting them out of there. And one of the seamen told him, said, Doctor, you can go with the wounded. And he said, no, if one more person gets in this lifeboat, it's sunk down in the water now. It's almost underwater now. If one more person gets in there, it'll sink. So he pushed the lifeboat away from the Alabama. That was the last one that was carrying the wounded away from it. And what he didn't tell the other people was he couldn't swim. So he went down with the ship. And Captain Sims and some of the people got picked up by an English yacht, the Deerhound. This fella had brought his yacht with his wife and kids down there to see this naval battle from England. And they swooped in and picked up quite a few of the Confederates that were in the water, just hanging on to debris or whatever came off the ship, and Captain Sims, and took them back to England. And the Yankees were saying, oh, you've got to turn him over to us. You've got to turn him. I said, no, he's in English waters now. We don't have to turn him over to you. So Sims actually got back to the United States, or not the United States, Confederate States, on a blockade runner and got to Matamoros, Mexico, and then made his way across the Mississippi on a homemade raft,
wow.
Got back to Richmond, and by the end of the war, there was no Confederate Navy left, so they gave him command of the James River Squadron, which was a few ships that had been protecting Richmond for Yankees coming up the James River. And when Lee abandoned the lines at Petersburg and began that retreat west, trying to head toward the mountains, Admiral Sims sank all the James River squadron ships in the James River down below Richmond. He didn't want the Yankee Navy to be the first enemy into the Confederate capital. So they weren't. They couldn't get up the James River. And it was Grant's army that got into Richmond and Petersburg before the Navy did. And then, of course, Lee's army surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse. And Sims and some of the Navy personnel and Marines were heading on parallel roads to the south of the route Lee was taking, and they heard that Lee had surrendered. And then they turned south and went down into North Carolina and joined up with Joseph E. Johnston's army, what was left of the Army of Tennessee, in North Carolina, and fought at the Battle at Bentonville. And then finally, of course, they were surrendered at Bennett Farmhouse on the 26th of April. And they got Sims, and the Yankees were going to take him back to Washington and try him as a pirate, and said he was not a naval officer, he was a pirate. Well, he most certainly was. He was commissioned as an officer in the Confederate Navy. But they said, oh, no, he's a pirate. We're going to put him on trial. And this was the thing after the war. They wanted to hang Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis and a lot of the Confederate leaders to get revenge for them, quote, starting the war. And, of course, Lincoln sending a fleet into Charleston Harbor had nothing to do with starting the war, of course. But that's the story they were telling. And so they sent Sims to the Marine barracks at 8th and I Street in Washington. And they were saying, oh, boy, these Marines, they're going to be tough on him. He'll be sorry he ever joined the Confederacy. Well, we'll get him now. Yes, sir. That's the place we're sending him. What they didn't know was that Sims...
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey? Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Gave you power, huh? Let me tell you something, boy. If I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. I was just telling Gene during the break, it is so frustrating for me, and I know it's going to be many times more frustrating for Gene, to tell people to try to get the truth. The real truth of what the so-called Civil War was never was a Civil War. It was one nation, the United States, invading another independent nation, and the crimes, the atrocities committed against the Southern people. And we've talked about how the Southern people suffered just like our German brothers did in World War One, especially World War Two. And so many lies told about both those great peoples, but I just wish, Gene, I wish the world, I wish we had more money where we could get more radio broadcasts, more radio stations, more newspapers, we could get the real truth of this out, for this, and the people could realize.
You can't do it, Eddie. You can't do it. None of the TV networks will broadcast the truth. They get so-called historians on there that just, they're nothing but propagandists, and they just repeat the same old lies. And even these so-called conservatives, like Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and the late Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly, They just worship Lincoln like he was some kind of immortal god or something on the, you know, Mount Olympus that came down to save all of us, you know, commoners. And, well, I mean, look what they did. They built that pagan temple on the mall in D.C. to Lincoln. And they got him sitting up on that throne like some Greek god, you know, and I call him the Greek god Bucrapus Maximus, the Roman god of lies and misinformation.
So, but he was.
You know, they had this Lincoln worshiping fetish in this country that he saved the Union. No, he didn't. He destroyed it.
Yes, he did.
He destroyed the Union of sovereign states and replaced it with a federal dictatorship. And all these so-called conservative commentators, like that Mark Levin on Fox, and he rants and raves and carries on and, you know, pulls glasses down and waves his glasses at us about how rotten the federal government is, and they've done this and they've done that, and they try to do this, and they're taking our rights away from it. And then, darn, he's got a bust of Abraham Lincoln right behind him. Marky boy, who do you think started all this mess?
That's so, insanity. That really is. That is total insanity.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, we got off track a little bit there. But, you know, it's good on the program. We can throw some other information out there to our people. We were talking about June 19th and the battle between the Alabama and the Kearsarge and what happened to Raphael Sims, the commander of the Alabama, when he got back to the Confederacy and the James River Squadron, and then surrendered down in North Carolina with Joseph E. Johnston, what was left of the Army of Tennessee. And, of course, they wanted to hang him. The Yankees did. They said he was a pirate, and, you know, even though he's a Confederate naval officer. They always go after somebody they can't defeat. That's why they always drag Forrest's name through the mud. Forrest whipped the hell out of the Yankees every time they had the misfortune of running into him on a battlefield somewhere. So they couldn't defeat him on the battlefield, so they tell nothing but lies and misinformation about Forrest. That he started the Ku Klux Klan, which is a lie. That he ordered the massacre of the poor Negro troops at Fort Pillow, which is a lie. You know, just everything they can. And they did the same thing about, you know, Admiral Sims. So they said, okay, we're going to put him on trial after the war. We want him locked up at the Marine Barracks at 8th and I Street in Washington. And boy, this will really get him. Those Marines will really give it to him. They're tough, and they're going to, oh, he'll be miserable there on bread and water. What they forgot was that Captain Raphael Sims and Jacob Zelin, the commandant of the Marine Corps, had served together in the U.S. Navy before the war. They were good friends. So, yes, Raphael Sims was at the Marine Barracks, but he stayed in the commandant's home, and he had a bedroom up on the third floor, you know, kind of a guest bedroom, and he'd come down every morning, and he'd and Commandant Jacob Zelin, they would have breakfast together and recall the old days. You remember that time in Hong Kong, and we were in that place, boy, the police were coming, we were jumping out the back window. Oh, no, no, you were the one that was jumping out. So, you know, they had a good time of it, and finally they just dropped the charges. So that was one of our June battles. And the thing I wanted to bring up again today, or we've got a few minutes left here, there were battles fought in our War for Independence all over the world. We talked about the Alabama and the Kearsarge at Cherbourg. The Confederate commerce raider, the Shenandoah, destroyed the Yankee whaling fleet up in the Bering Sea. And even here in North America, we think of all the battles being fought in the South and, you know, maybe Sharpsburg in Maryland and Gettysburg up in Pennsylvania, but we're talking about Morgan's raid across Indiana and Ohio, and it gets even further away from that. There was a battle fought, or two or three battles fought, out in the Arizona Territory, and one of the bigger ones was Picacho Pass, I think that's pronounced correctly, P-I-C-A-C-H-O, on April 15th, 1862, which is not far from between Tucson and Phoenix there, and this was on the Butterfield Stagecoach Line, and the U.S. soldiers were sent out from California. They didn't want the Confederates in the Arizona Territory because of all the silver mines, and they were afraid if they got those, that would help finance the war. So Yankee soldiers were sent out from California, and they were defeated on April 15th there in the Arizona Territory. Another bigger battle that was fought in the Arizona Territory was at Glorieta Pass, and today it's New Mexico, but it was Arizona Territory back then, and it was March 26th, 27th, and 28th, in 1862. General Henry Sibley was the Confederate commander, and he even invented the Sibley tents. It's kind of almost like an Indian teepee, but that's what he was famous for. And both sides had about 400 soldiers each. The Confederates were coming up through the pass on the Santa Fe Trail, and the Union soldiers sent a detachment away from the pass there up over the mesa. They climbed along the mesa there and were able to get around behind the Confederates and burn their supply train. So the Confederates had to retreat and abandon the first 2 days of victory they had against the Yankee soldiers. Because now remember, this is out in the desert. And you can't go down the road to, you know, Farmer Jones' well and get water or whatever you need. You've got to pretty much carry your supplies with you in some of these barren places out in the Southwest. And once you lost your supply train, then it's pretty rough to make it on eating cactus or rattlesnakes or whatever you can find out there. So they had to retreat back to Texas. So those were pretty far away from Atlanta and Nashville and Mobile and Richmond and most of the places that we think of for battles during the War for Independence being fought. There's another one that was fought way away from the South. This was just a few miles south of the Canadian border. This was on October 19th, 1864. Confederates out of Canada raided St. Albans, Vermont. And
Canada,
they,
wow.
Yeah, it was just a few miles south of the Canadian border. And they hit three banks there. And the reason they hit the banks at that time of year was because they knew the banks were going to be full of money from all of the maple syrup sales that were going on. That was the big product in that part of the state of Vermont. And after all these sales, the farmers were putting their money in these banks. So these Confederates came in there and hit the banks. Said, thank you very much. We'll make a slight deposit for the government of the Confederate States of America. Thank you. And hit the banks and cleaned them out. And I've been there. And they have a sign there and talks about it. The three banks, and they also took the horses from the livery stable. And reading that, it was so apparent to me. The Confederates raided a northern town. They did not loot people's, steal people's everything, possessions from private homes, or burn their homes down, or slaughter their livestock, or rob the civilians. They hit the banks, and they took enough horses to mount up and get back out of there and back to Canada. And that, what a difference in the raid the Confederates made on a northern town and what they did to our towns, burning Richmond and Atlanta and Columbia and Jackson and destroying these towns. And the thing we were talking about several weeks ago, comparing what happened to the South during the war and after the war and what happened to the German towns and cities during the war and after the war, like Dresden and Hamburg and what just total destruction they brought down on those cities. Or total destruction on Richmond or Atlanta or Columbia and things like that in the South. This is a good comparison. So anyway, they got away. Confederate raiding party got away, got back into Canada, and the U.S. government wanted them arrested and sent back to the United States. And they said, the Canadians said no. They were hailed as heroes in Canada because even back then, Canada didn't want to be the 51st state in the United States. And if you ever get a chance, there was a movie about that. It was called The Raid, and it starred Van Heflin, Richard Boone, Anne Bancroft, and Lee Marvin. And Lee Marvin was just starting out in the movies back then. But it's a pretty good movie, but it was based on that raid on St. Albans, Vermont. And they got most of the facts, and they didn't Hollywood it up too bad. And Van Heflin's supposed to have this romantic attraction to this widow that was there, Anne Bancroft, and nothing like that happened during the raid. They just, Confederates got in, hit the banks, and boom, got out of there. So anyway, but it made a good story, I guess, for Hollywood in the movie. I think it was 1954 is when that movie came out. And back
yeah,
then, you could actually, well, I looked it up, and you could have pro-Confederate movies back then. You can't have them today. So thank you for the time, Eddie. I hope we learned some things about Confederate history.
Thank you so much. You certainly did. I was going to say something, I'll forget all about what I was going to say. Maybe I'll remember it for next time, Gene. Well, thank you, Bitter Eater, for coming on. I really appreciate that. And we're going to transition now. People, the last hour, we're going to pick up Sister Monica's Braveheart Shaker. And I think old Ben's going to call in. Ben Walker. So be right back, folks.